Coming up on All About Android, we discuss T-Mobile's expanded partnership with Google on messaging. Also, OnePlus's dedication to the mid-range again. Pixel 4a versus OnePlus 7T and a video mail that we got. We love those video mails. Keep them coming. Galaxy S20 Tactical Edition is a new thing. Assistant has a new app called Action Blocks made by Google. Your email and more next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/android. And by IT Pro TV. Learn the ins and outs of IT careers and get the most up-to-date training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/allaboutandroid for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Make sure and use code AAA30 at checkout. And by LegalZoom, take an important step for your family today. Go to LegalZoom.com and get started on a last will, living trust, and more. Or find out how you can speak to an attorney for advice on the right estate plan. Hello, welcome to All About Android, episode 474, recorded on Tuesday, May 25th, 2020, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I am the faithful Ron Richards.
And I am also the faithful Flo.
We are faithful,
we're all faithful.
Friend Zion.
We're faithful Android. To the Android.
Android will never leave you.
Nope.
You are faithful to death. The very end. Never say never. There is an alternate timeline where suddenly we end up, one of us ends up buying the iPhone SE 2020. It's possible.
Yeah, very alternate timeline.
That's like seven. Great question. Away. What would it take for you to jump from Android to iOS?
Man.
Like, what's the one, like... I mean, I asked that question really not having to answer myself. I have no desire to. Every time I use an iOS device, I want to throw it out the window. But I wonder what would be the thing that they could dangle at us that would make our lives easier or better.
I can't tell. I can't say that right off the top of my head. I could come up with a thing that'd be like, if they do that, I'm out.
Right.
You know, I think at this point I'm kind of all in. Like I've pushed the chips all the way in and like I'm committed. Like I kind of have no choice at this point. It's kind of what I do.
I will also say I've drawn lines in the sand saying that if they do this, I'm out. And then the company has done that and I've still been in. So I'm not one to talk here. So yeah.
So apparently we're not going anywhere. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say something, Flo.
No, I was just saying faithful and loyal Ron. Just
that's right. All of us.
To a fault.
Really.
To
I mean, you can come up with something, right, Flo? Is there a single thing that Apple could do that you'd be like, okay, Android, I know we've been together for a long time, but I'm out.
No, but I was going through my photos the other day, as one does during quarantine when you're just thinking about life. You have a lot of time to think. And I was reminded that I used to have an iPhone back in the 4S days. And I didn't know who I was back then. I didn't know who I was during that time of my life. So,
I mean, it was a time of experimentation. You were kind of like, you know what? I'm just going to experiment. I'm going to play the field, see how it goes over there in Apple Land.
I remember how excited I was to finally have access to Instagram. And then Instagram finally came to Android. And then I was just like, that's it. I'm going. So I guess Apple would have to come out with something that all my friends are on. Not
well,
iMessage.
I mean, I was going to say they already did.
I was going to say iMessage. Yeah. That would be the thing. If that's not going to work, then I don't know what will.
They would have to block my friends into iMessage so that I couldn't talk to them.
Oh, that's interesting. So if they put a gate around Apple users that you had to be on the platform in order to contact them, that would be the reason
that I wouldn't want to go to Apple, because I'm like, screw you for making me make that choice.
And then I would protest until we sue them for antitrust, because honestly, what?
Well, you know, a decision like that wouldn't last long. Not only is it user hostile, but then to your point, it would be antitrust. Like, I wouldn't put it past Apple, but I feel like if they were going to do that, they would have done it by now.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Well, we're kind of talking about, at least elements of the top story today. So why don't we, Burke, dive into the news? It's time.
Anthony says, make OnePlus cheap again. Here's Android news.
I love the awkward silence where I'm not sure if Burke is going to say anything. And so I'm about to say something to fill the silence. And then Burke chimes in.
Yes, exactly. Like, I don't know where this is going to go. I also appreciate using the Android news. What's that?
Sorry, Burke is working. Sorry, guys. It's always the Skype thing makes it, I was just saying Burke is working up his confidence now that he's been here with us for basically since quarantine started, right? So
it's true. However, what Burke just said came from Anthony, who's filling in for Victor. Victor is off this evening, so Anthony's filling in. And Anthony used the news bumper slot not to make an announcement about stories coming up necessarily, or maybe so, but I felt like it was like a statement from him, like, this is what you need to do on Plus.
And
I
think that's kind of a new platform thing. Yeah,
platform.
Well, we're going to get... Yeah. Should we start with OnePlus then? Should we just switch the order?
Okay. No, we should go. We should go to our original segue.
Okay, fine. So we're talking about iMessage and walled gardens and things like that. And anytime we talk about messaging, it's an interesting topic, of course. And a huge aspect of that in the Android world has been the emergence of RCS, or at least the stumbling out of the gate of RCS, with Google attempting to make RCS available in messages, and then, varying levels of commitment on the from the platforms. But it looks as if we finally have a little bit of partnership between Google and a platform, as T-Mobile and Google have partnered now to make RCS a bit more universal. T-Mobile now supports the Universal Profile 1.0. This enables cross-carrier messaging, given that the other carrier supports it. So basically, you need two. It takes two to tango. This is the first time this has happened at all. And if you remember last year, the carriers also announced the cross-carrier messaging initiative. So they have plans as well. And that included T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon. But this Google T-Mobile solution appears to require Google Messages for now. So good progress in terms of Google working with a carrier. But so if you're T-Mobile to T-Mobile and you're using Google Messages, you could use RCS. If you're T-Mobile to AT&T or Verizon, no luck. If you're T-Mobile to T-Mobile and it's Google Messages to Textra or SMS app of your choice, no luck either. Do we think that this is a first down, to use a football metaphor, for RCS and Google, or is it just more stumbling out of the gate?
Ron, are you qualified to use a football metaphor?
I'm not. I should have gone baseball. I really should have gone. Is this a home run or more of a single? How about that?
Or is it a slam dunk? So T-Mobile to T-Mobile, obviously, like, that's been happening. T-Mobile, like, let's say there's a carrier overseas that also supports the universal profile. Essentially, what this means is now, like, it's not just T-Mobile to T-Mobile, it's T-Mobile to any carrier that supports the universal profile. So technically, this is a step in the direction of all, hopefully, a day where all carriers support a single RCS protocol. And we're getting the benefits of this in all of our messaging going forward. So I think it's a big deal. One thing I thought was really funny is that T-Mobile's talking up how they were the first to get in with RCS, when really that was Sprint. But of course,
but now Sprint T-Mobile now
belongs to T-Mobile, so T-Mobile can effectively say we were there first, even though they really weren't. But anyway, so it's
clever marketing right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Flo, what do you think? Is this a game changer at all, or is this just a swing and a miss?
I wouldn't say it's a swing and a miss. I mean, maybe it's a single. It adds a point to the scoreboard, but it doesn't necessarily win one for the team.
Yeah.
It just kind of Because again, going back to what I was saying earlier in terms of like my friends being behind a garden, you know, I have to have my friends send me video through Instagram or like a third party.
Don't get me started on that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but I just want to bring up the fact that RCS is one thing, but we need something that's just going to unify us all in happiness.
Well, that's the challenge is that it true. I mean, and so that's one thing that I don't know. And maybe you guys know more about RCS, but does RCS handle multimedia files like that in a better way? Right. Like, I know that it allows you to see who's right. You know, if someone else is writing and there is an extra bit of encryption, which actually is an interesting point, because on Google Messages, 9to5 Google analyzed an internal build of Google Messages that appears to hint at end to end encryption coming to RCS and Messages. So it's super early, but it's promising that end to end encryption would be coming. But will RCS solve for the crappy MMS, you know, solving for the crappy MMS protocol in transferring videos and high res images? I think so.
My understanding of RCS is that it does that. It supports a higher quality transfer on images and video.
As far as I'm trying
to do searching to, you know, searching right now to back that up. But as far as I know, definitely for images. I don't know about for video, but I assume so.
Yeah, because there's nothing worse than getting the mini rectangle compressed, crunched video from an iPhone, from an iOS user over MMS. But you don't get good quality video from Android to Android sometimes too, which is frustrating. That's why I try to anybody that I'm trading media with, I've moved to WhatsApp, because that is a IP based data transfer messaging platform, right? And even though I'm not on Wi-Fi, but I'm out in my LTE connection, WhatsApp is sending files. They're true, like the file that someone sends is the file I get, versus going through layers of compression and things like that to make it transferable. So if RCA, you know, RCS takes that away, that's great, you know, because that's really the main reason why I've moved so much over to WhatsApp. But again, you're waiting for everyone else to get it. So it's so early in this game, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to change anything, because the number of people that I message with that are on Google Messages and on T-Mobile is probably pretty slim. I mean, like, that's another question, which is, in terms of SMS apps, I mean, are we all using Google Messages, or are you guys not using Google Messages?
I'm using Google Messages, but I barely use it. I mean, I use it with my iPhone friends.
Right. But I guess in this world of Android, I mean, Jason, what are you using?
Yeah, Google Messages. Okay. That's the one that
I use. Okay, so maybe I'm over. I was going to use this as a sample, be like, here's three people, and we're all using three different SMS apps. We're all using the same SMS app, but, you know, but I'm sure that there's many people out there. You're still using Textra or some of the other, SMS messaging apps. So who knows?
Yeah. I made my husband leave Textra because he was having some server issues. Like, nobody was getting his messages. He was getting messages late. And I told him, I said, you don't need that anymore. Like, you can just go to Android Messages. It had been a long time since he had used it exclusively. So
yeah. And I mean, Android Messages, by the way, might actually be getting encrypted, end-to-end encrypted messaging to tie in with RCS, which we've heard for the last couple of years was not part of the plan. And there's been a lot of like finger wagging at RCS and at Google, you know, for pushing this initiative that doesn't include end-to-end encryption when Apple does it, you know, in their kind of solution here. You know, slowly but surely, they're working on these issues. If we can get if we can get to a place where all carriers are supporting a single plan, then great. Then we have what you're talking about, Ron. The big challenge, as far as I'm concerned, is the iPhone challenge, which is if Apple never supports RCS, we will continue to get crappy video quality from iPhones. And that's such a bummer when that happens, because the people on the other side, like the people on the iPhones, think that I'm getting the same video, but I'm like, I wouldn't even save this to my phone. It looks that bad.
You know? I don't even say anything anymore. I don't complain anymore. Yeah, anybody who's sending me a video who doesn't know to send it through something else isn't someone that I have the time or patience to have the conversation with. So I just go, ha, and then I move on.
I have a lot of friends who are very close to me who still use iMessage. And I think it's because a lot of people, this just does not resonate with them because it's not a thing that they think about.
You have to question how close they are to you then, Flo.
No, that's not necessarily, that's not fair, because a person that I'm referring to is like a person I've known for a very, very long time. I think it's just A, the convenience factor. Like, nobody wants to have to click through into another app just to send me a video when they're just, they just want to show me a video of what they're doing out in the world. And I think the second thing is that, honestly, this just isn't something that people know about.
If they're on the sending side of things, they very well
It's just not some, it's not an issue that people are aware of outside of our circles. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's an
issue that millions of Android users feel and get frustrated by, and that they're, I think you,
they might not circles, know why.
They might not know why or what's going on, or they'll just, you know, kind of groan about it,
but
yeah, I'm sure that there's a lot of people who it's affected by who don't even understand why it's like that. They just think that transferring video sucks.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And that's more of what I meant. It's just that, you know, it's something that people have just learned to live with. I don't know. We talk about messaging and messaging on Android and just how this is all going to unify. And I just, you know, it just feels all up in the air. And it just feels like whatever way that I can get in touch with people, I'll do it. And that's that. Even if there's like seven different ways. I've just become accustomed to it, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are too many ways.
That's true.
That's my frustration as I'm in a meeting and I look at my phone and I watch Slack, Instagram DMs, text message, WhatsApp. The list goes
Discord,
on and on.
Twitter DMs.
All blowing up.
Email.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything just blowing up. Yeah. Oh, the
exhausting.
Three people who still use Hangouts with me. That's yes.
Too many messages.
Coming in.
Too many messages.
Too many messages. What about we segue over to too many phone models, maybe?
Do it.
Okay.
Possibly.
Yeah, that kind of works. Yeah.
I don't know if there is such a thing as, well, there is such a thing as too many phone models, but I think to have choice is nice, and I think that this next bit of news might be very exciting for OnePlus fans, especially those who might be wondering if OnePlus will ever make an affordable phone again. The answer is... maybe. So Fast Company has an exclusive interview with OnePlus CEO Pete Lau, detailing how the company plans to focus more on affordable phones going forward. So the interview teased an upcoming announcement for India customers. The often leaked OnePlus Z, which we've talked about here on All About Android, which I'm sure you've read about if you're reading the Android rumor mill, it is expected to be announced during that special announcement time in India when OnePlus eventually has its event. The device will likely launch in India only, however, and then OnePlus will bring more affordable devices to other markets, including us here in North America and Europe later this year. Of course, it doesn't mean that OnePlus is abandoning its top tier devices, because if you want to compete with the big boys, you have to have something that's big, a big boy. It just means that they're expanding into different price categories, which makes sense. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, that I believe 2020, for as slow as it's become, I know that meme is going out. It's like my expectations and then 2020 reality. I feel like for me, the meme would be my expectation is a shiny, like, flagship phone, five cameras, et cetera, et cetera. And the reality would be just the option of all these affordable phones that are just like pretty good for a reasonable
good
price.
Good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Good enough. Because I feel like with everything that humanity is going through right now, we really are just learning that there is such thing as good enough. So
yeah, I agree. And the right time for these devices, as we've talked about many times before. Yeah, and just to reiterate what you just said, OnePlus is not saying that they're going to stop doing the top tier. Essentially what they're saying is, we're going to be more like a top tier OEM. We're going to create a flagship like we have. And then we're also going to do what we were initially known for, which is creating a value tier. And so they're kind of going to sit on both sides of the fence, and which is good timing right now, as you know, as you were saying, because not everybody is interested in the $1,000 plus phones. And so this might be the right time for OnePlus to actually return to that price category.
And as their development or maturity as a company, I think it's the right time and a good move.
Yes.
Because, you know, as we've discussed, you don't want to see any company settle into the flagship area alone, or even on the mid tier or lower tier alone. You know, like I think the best phone company at right now, it's hard to argue the dominance Samsung has, and they've done it by balancing having these top tier crazy, you know, not crazy, but, you know, very full featured flagship phones, but then still offering something in the mid range for people to use, or marketing the older models as the mid range, or however else you might do it. You know, and I think that gives you a well-rounded company and gives you more options and gives you more customers. So I do like the idea of a OEM having a ladder of quality that customers can build to, that if I'm a, you know, 20 something kid getting my phone and I'm like, okay, cool, there's a $400 phone, I can afford that, but man, I'm gonna wish for the day I can afford the $800 phone. You know, I like having that thing to reach for through the lifespan of a customer. So I think it's a good move by OnePlus.
I agree. And what a way for OnePlus to have really grown in the last couple of years. I mean, when we had the OnePlus X, it was kind of just this experiment. People really liked the idea, but I think it just wasn't the right time for that. It wasn't the right time for OnePlus to do that as the company, with how small they were at the time. And I think they really needed to just focus on building up brand equity and just getting people to know them as a brand. And so now they have enough capital to say, look at us. Not only are we competing with the quote-unquote big boys, but we're also throwing something in with the small fries too. So
yep, good for you. Completely agree. I really love what OnePlus is doing right now. You know, yeah, they have their weird little marketing quibbles here and there, but they're doing hardware right, and they've got a pretty good marketing push happening, they're doing a good job of getting their phones where they need to be. And so I really like what they're seeing there. What we're seeing
now. It's a good look at how a company is supposed to mature. They started out, yeah, you know, and anyway, I could go forever with this metaphor, but I'm not going to, because we have other things to cover.
That's right. We got an email from Nick, who writes in to say, hey, AAA team. So, trying not to have an anxiety attack because of losing Google Play Music, I was really sad to hear about your experiences after moving your libraries over to YouTube Music. Yes, I check out bands on there, but Tube screams TV, not music to me. Maybe I'm getting old. So I was going to try and download my library and see what it is like living in Plex. I already have my movies there. But when I go to the settings in Google Music on the web and attempt to download my library, I get this message below and sent a link, which basically says download music, a maximum of 100 songs can be downloaded at once. Please select fewer songs and try again. He says, I'm baffled because I don't see anywhere to select songs, despite I was just assuming it was going to download my entire library when I click download library, which is a pretty good assumption to make, dare I say. Nick says, am I missing something? You are, though you wouldn't know that you were, because Google doesn't do a good job in that settings pane of letting you know what the answer is. And I actually reached out to Google earlier today because I tried it myself, and I was trying to remember whether you could even do this through the web before or not. That button certainly makes it seem like you should have been able to, and that you could have been able to. But now, of course, you run up against this 100 song limit. And what Google reminded me is that they have a music manager app that you can install. It's a separate app, an actual app, not a web app, on PC and Mac. And it was designed to be like an automatic uploader for music. So if you had a watch folder or whatever, and you had music, it would automatically put it in the cloud.
And it worked great. I love that. I love the Music Manager app, because I would download stuff off iTunes and then it would send it up to Google Play Music.
Yeah, and it would do it kind of automatically for you. And yeah, it was really great. If you had a large library, it was nice to just set that up instead of do it through the web app. So if you have that app installed, there is a place there where you can download your entire library. I wish that I could tell you that I was able to do that today, because I've run up against my deauthorization limit. And so I'm contacting Google to try and get that removed, because I can't even install the app. It's like, no, well, I can install the app, but I can't sign into it. It says, no, you're already, you know, reached your limit on deauthorization. So essentially my music is locked in the locker, which is not ideal, but I would love to get it down, because yeah, maybe there are other options and I'd like to have that music back. I want my music back, Google. So hopefully that's helpful, Nick.
I love that you ran into the deauthorization limit, like the nested problem of within a problem.
Well, yeah. Yes, and the problem that YouTube Music is inheriting from Google Play Music, it also has a device limit. I mean, truthfully, I thought that the authorization limit was removed from my account. I was told because I review a lot of phones, so I would always email and call and say, hey, can we wipe it clean again? Because I have new phones and I really want this to be part of how I test phones because I use it all the time. And someone had told me, yeah, great, you're not going to run into that anymore. I just made the switch. And apparently that's not true. And that's fine. I don't mind. I'll contact them. But it's just a bummer because I wanted to test this out for you, Nick. But anyways, AAA@twit.tv. Let us know your questions or 347-SHOW-AAA. And you can leave us a voicemail or you can record a video. And we're going to have one of those in a little bit. But let's take a moment. Thank the sponsor of this episode of All About Android. And that is Mint Mobile. Think back to when you first got your first cell phone, one of the big wireless providers years ago that you probably signed on to. I know I did. Did you like those high monthly bills? I didn't think so. I definitely encountered that, particularly with Verizon, maybe less so with T-Mobile. But, you know, the bills can be pretty expensive, and that's because they're paying for overhead for their businesses. They've got the actual brick and mortar stores. It's just a different ball game. But there are other options that you can check out that'll actually give you the premium service that you're used to at a fraction of the cost. And that option is Mint Mobile. By switching to Mint Mobile, I actually cut my wireless bill down to just $15 a month, saved hundreds of dollars in the process. For anyone out there who's looking to save without sacrificing service, and that's the most important part, right? Like, you're spending less, but your service is the same, and that's definitely been the case for me. Switching to Mint Mobile is a no-brainer. They offer premium wireless for just $15 a month, and that's because they're doing all their business online, right? So they're eliminating the cost of retail, the overhead, that sort of stuff. They can pass that significant savings on to you. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text, plus 4G LTE. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number. That's what I did. I just ported it right along with my existing contacts, and there was never a hiccup in the process. Switch now to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless for $15 a month. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile actually has you covered with their 7-day money back guarantee. So you really have no reason not to check it out. It makes a whole lot of sense why you're saving the money. I'm telling you, the service is the same. I've noticed no difference between what I got before with T-Mobile and what I get now with Mint Mobile. I just love it. So to get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/android. That's mintmobile.com/android, and you can cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. mintmobile.com/android. And we thank them for their support of All About Android and the Twit Network. All right. Are you ready for hardware? Because I'm ready for hardware. Oh, yeah. Is Burke ready for hardware?
Nope. Double nope.
That's the news bumper. Ouch. But we'll pretend. We will pretend that this is hardware. It's okay.
It's hardware all news. Really. It's hardware it's all news. Yeah.
It's so, hard.
It is hard.
Hardware is hard. Oh, there okay. It is. Look all at right. Look at all that. It's as if it never happened. Thank you, Bert.
Thank you, Bert.
So the latest and greatest from hardware. Earlier this year, we saw the return of the Motorola Razr, but this time as a foldable Android phone, which is just amazing. And who would have thought that we would see another one this year? Or at least maybe it's on the horizon. It's looking like in September-ish, Motorola will be announcing the Motorola Razr 2, or the next version of it, running a Snapdragon 765 with 8 gig of RAM, 256 gig of storage, 2845 milliamp battery with 48 megapixel rear camera, 20 megapixel front camera. Supposedly it will support 5G, though likely not the millimeter wave 5G like Verizon's ultra wide band network. And it looks like a September launch for version 2 would be a quick turnaround for the Razr 1, which was released February 6th. But maybe this is just an announcement in September for release later this year. Who knows if it's going to come in September. Do you think this bodes well for the Razr line, or is this admitting failure on the Razr line?
Ooh, failure. Ouch.
That's an interesting place to jump.
It seems like a pretty quick new version to put out in the world.
Yeah. Well,
what else are you going to do?
Is it just a slight refresh?
Working on it. Maybe the whole 5G thing, you know, they knew they weren't able to get there with the initial one, but they knew they wanted to be there as soon as possible. And so, you know, they knew with the first generation they couldn't quite get there, but let's turn around and do another one that does support 5G, because that's what people are going to expect by the time it would come out. I don't know. That's just a guess.
It's the Google ship early, ship often, and iterate. Could it be that? They're just iterating on
see what happens. Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
I still have not held one in my hands yet. I'm still dying to. My Motorola contact never came through with it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling bummed about that too, because I've not really played around with the Motorola Razr foldable. I've not played around with the Galaxy Z Flip. These foldables, I just assumed that at some point in time they would come across me, you know, my path, but they haven't. I'm still foldless.
Can I be honest? I completely forgot that those happened this year.
Yeah, it's been quite a year. It's been a while.
But think about that for a second. It's been quite a year. We're dealing with a lot, admittedly. Yeah. And you think that this is, but the thing is, I'm not. I know OnePlus has launched new phones. I know which of the Chinese OEMs have launched new phones. I know Samsung has new stuff, but I completely forgot about all this foldable hype.
To Flo's point, the foldable train has lost some steam. It seems really right around the time when the whole COVID-19 thing started. Not that I think the two are related in any way, but we had a bunch of activity on the foldables in January and February, culminating with the release of the Motorola Razr in early February. And it felt as if there was a lot, like every other week we were talking about a foldable phone, and then it just stopped.
Yep.
So that's really curious. Yep. It's really interesting.
It is. Yep. But then at the same time, when you think about what we're talking about just moments ago on the show, this moment in time, like the emphasis on mid-range is becoming louder and louder. Like, talk about premium smartphones. Even mid-range foldables cost more than most premium smartphones. So when you're talking about a place in the market for devices like these, sure, they're cool, but are people really going to spend the extra money for something like this if their whole, you know, intention is to save money and maybe not buy a new phone every year and maybe buy a mid-range phone that's going to save them money? You know, like, I don't know. I don't think so.
This is not the year to make buying phones a hobby, but rather this is the year.
That's true.
I was trying to think of the right word, and all I could think of was hobby. Like, this is not the year to go and just be like, I'm just going to buy a bunch of tech because it's fun to do, and I just want to play with all this new stuff. This is the year that you kind of like hunker down, count your pennies, really take stock of your necessities. I mean, this could very well change how we shop for things going forward, what we learn from this situation. This could be a wake-up call for us.
Flo, I feel like this is that whole monologue is a great segue for the next story.
Well, yes, because you see Samsung is working on a tactical edition of its flagship, the Galaxy S20. Tactical edition, so Galaxy S20 TE, as you'd probably look for it. Yeah, I also kind of feel like this is just the perfect phone for how we currently feel like we're in the end times. So why not market a phone to folks who are just looking for something that's just extremely practical? So this new version of the Galaxy S20 is designed for the federal government and Department of Defense. It has expanded data encryption, so it uses a dual DAR architecture, which is based on the NSA standards. It has a night vision mode, which is not just a tale of MacGyver times. This is a thing that exists. It also has tactical radio and mission system connectivity right out of the box. It also includes in this package a $290 ruggedized case with stainless steel buttons, a glass screen protector, an IP67 rating, which is already coupled with the phone's IP68 rating. The case is expected to be sold for anybody who wants to make use of it in June. But this particular phone, the Tactical Edition, the TE, it will be available the third quarter of this year. So it's coming up this summer. Again, I just feel like this is the perfect time for... Now, Samsung knows exactly. It shifted gears. It said, you know what? We're not doing the foldable phone thing anymore. That's it. We did it. It's out there. Let's switch gears. Let's get something a little more current events. Let's get something to really ride the wave. And here we go. We've got a Tactical Edition phone to go with that Jeep Wrangler that you keep putting height on because who knows?
To your point, though, it is, you know, while it does say it was designed for the federal government and Department of Defense, which, you know, in this era of spending, you know, they spared no expense. You got to imagine that there's a certain population of this country that would be very interested in this type of phone with that sort of stuff, with crazy data encryption and privacy and keeping, you know, like keeping things locked in. So like years ago, I'm already laughing at this and how just ridiculous and over spec this is. But there are totally people who would buy this phone.
Yes. Yes, I agree. If you've ever been to the woods in any state in the United States of America, I have a feeling you will find a small subset of folks who would find this to be a very interesting tool to have in their arsenal.
Yeah. And I mean, even the announcement says this device is going to be available via channel partners in Samsung's government program. So the device itself is really not designed for the everyday consumer. Even the tinfoil hat wearing consumer would probably have a harder time getting a hold of this device specifically because it's available to the government.
We'll but be surprised. The case, things have ways of getting true. Out. Things, yeah, they
that's
have a
true.
Life of their own.
Yeah,
I just, you know, I want to see if this is something that I could give my husband because he keeps threatening that he's going to get a ham radio, install it in his car, and also just like go around yelling at people with a radio in his car. So I don't know. This will help satiate that need.
Like yelling at people? Like would he also have a speaker on the outside of his car so he could?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Why not? Why not?
That sounds fun. I mean,
right? Just going around yelling at people. I mean...
Hey, stop it. Stop you over there. Scare the living daylights out of people. That's a good idea. I like that.
Why did you cut me off?
Anyway. Yes. Let's see here. Google Pixel 4a. Apparently, it is being delayed further. Now, it's a device that's not even out yet, so it's hard to say for sure, you know, what the delays were initially. But apparently, according to a tweet by John Prosser, on Twitter, he says that it's delayed into July, says units are ready to ship, but the announcement announcement of being delayed to July 13th is due to smartphone market conditions. So it's not that they don't have the supplies available to create the phone. It's that everything's up topsy-turvy right now. Maybe we should hold off before we roll it out. You know, I guess they're thinking that July would be a better time than right now. I don't know that I agree with that. 4G only, so no 5G on this device. Just Black is supposedly going to release August 6th, Barely Blue October 1st. So right already we're looking at like a very, very delayed based on the 4A compared to the 3A time schedule from last year. The 3A came out right about now, right? Like it was timed with Google I.O. We got our hands on the devices and it was immediately. Yep. This is going to end up putting it months later than that would be. Also happens to say that the Pixel 5 is likely pushed back. So, I mean, I think in my head, I was thinking that we were going to hear about the Pixel 4a during Google's beta show, which is next Wednesday, I believe, at 8 a.m. Pacific. By the way, Flo, Ron, and I are going to be doing live coverage at twit.tv/live. Check for that. I just assumed that it was going to be part of that because of the tie-in with Google I.O. last year, but apparently that's not the case.
I wonder how much of this is the reality of the world affecting their launch plans. you know, because so much of manufacturing in China was impacted this year. So much of, you know, supply chains were, have been interrupted around the world. You know, so like this is unfortunate, but it seems like they're in kind of the make the best, you know, make lemonade out of lemons kind of situation. And that I bet you there was, you know, widespread manufacturing delays and shipping delays that led to this. And, you know, they might have been in a spot where they, you know, they had all the pieces for the just black version, but not the barely blue version. Right. You know, who knows what it takes to get all that, all those pieces in place. So, you know, kind of, you know, in any given year, you know, kind of raise an eyebrow at Google and be like, what are you doing here? But given on this, I'm, you know, I'm glad that they're, you know, going to release in July. I'm surprised they'd release in July, given everything that's happened this year.
Yeah. And Wade County in chat has an interesting, proposition or an interesting idea. Says the delay is because Google is waiting for the second wave of stimulus checks, just like Apple dropped the SE on the first wave.
I mean, that's like a little conspiracy.
Seems like a ways to go. Why wouldn't they just then they're saying the device won't stand on its own unless we time it with a moment where people are flush with a sudden influx of cash to, you know, make the purchase before they think twice about it. And I don't think I don't think Google would do that.
I mean, possibly. Did Apple really time the
that's a big assumption there too.
No, I don't think they did. Well, the thing is first we're assuming that the company would assume that that's what people would spend their money on, which considering the unemployment rate right now, I really don't.
It's a fair point. I just did a search for stimulus check Apple, and April 15th on thestate.com. I don't know what that site is, but it's Apple reveals new iPhone as coronavirus stimulus checks get delivered. Like, there seems to be, there was a correlation there with the checks started hitting April 15th, right when the phone came out. So maybe they did.
I mean, do you really think Apple was like, all right, we think the stimulus checks are going to happen. Let's release on that date. The stimulus checks are going to release on that date. Let's do it. I don't think
I wouldn't put it past them. I wouldn't put it past them.
I think this was the original launch date for the iPhone SE. And I think because it was supposed to correspond with whatever Google was going to do at I.O. That's my deep feeling, because they were going based on the pattern, the release pattern of the last couple of years. And I'm sure there's some insider information there that we're not privy to. You know, people talk, and these companies, they hear the crosstalk going on between them to kind of know, like, you know, what's happening with supply chains and things like that. But with supply chains, I feel like that would be, it'd be very difficult to try and, sorry, somebody's at my front door. It would be very difficult to time that.
There are also rumors pointing to a less expensive price for the 4A, possibly $350. I don't know how credible that rumor is. You know how it is as we lead up to these things. There's rumors all over the map, and some of them end up being true, and some of them end up being really false. So we'll see. But is Google, if they have the devices ready and they're holding on to them because of this like market analysis, are they ceding any ground to Apple? And I think we've kind of talked about this before, how Apple is an entirely different ecosystem than Android. So they're probably not appealing to the same people, even though they're the same price point. But I mean, they're ceding at least some of the market in that process, right? Like Apple has a very highly regarded, inexpensive phone right now versus Google's eventually.
I don't know. It just has been.
I stumped you, didn't I?
You did stump me with that one. Yeah.
All right. Ron, you got the video mail.
Yeah. So that said, so speaking of the Google Pixel 4a, we got a video mail from Big Jim, James Thatcher. So let's hear what Jim has to say.
Hey, all about Android crew. It is I, Big Jim, and I've got a question for you guys. Pixel 4a, we've been pushed back again. So I've been kind of waiting for this. You guys have been hyping up the 4a, and okay, cool. Look at it. But I've got a OnePlus 5, and I've been happy with it forever. And it's not breaking down yet, but I mean, it's starting to show signs. So would it be better for me to just go with a 7T yeah, I know it's $150 more, but the specs seem better than the Pixel 4a. And yeah, I'm only going to have 6 months left of supposed life from Google, but OnePlus is still servicing my 5. So is there any reason for me not to buy the 7T?
No.
It's a good, that was a good face at the end of there, Jim.
7T, by the way, right here. This could be yours, Jim. This right
it's
here.
It's been a while.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm a strong advocate of if you are happy with a brand, stick with it until you are not.
Yep.
So if you're happy with the OnePlus 5, go with the 7T. You know, like there's no, I mean, totally. OnePlus, what's great about OnePlus is that it's so close to stock Android that there's really no, there's a couple of OnePlusisms here and there, but nothing that gets in your way of using it. And honestly, I mean, I don't know that the 4A, you know, to me at least, the 4A isn't a slam dunk yet until we see it and we see how people play with it and stuff like that. Whereas the OnePlus 7T has been on market in the market and, you know, Jason has one, can confirm how well it works or how good it is, you know. I don't know. And if that were me, I'd probably stick with the OnePlus.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the 7T was a really great phone. I, in fact, said it was solid when I reviewed it back when it came out. You know, again, the thing with OnePlus, I think it comes back down to camera a little bit. Like, you get excellent design, you get, you know, Android 10 and updates. It's a really great phone in many ways. Your images, they're just not going to be as good as what you're probably going to get out of the 4A, but you might be fine with that. Like, maybe they're good enough. Just, I guess that depends. That's person to person.
Keep forgetting about the camera, which I shouldn't, because that's like the most important part of any phone in this day and age. But I think that is a good point that OnePlus has done a lot of significant changes to its camera software, algorithm, whatever you want to call it. And I feel like what you get now with the 8s is a lot better than what maybe you would get with the 7. And the trade-off is that with a Pixel device, you get that Google blessing behind it. So it really is about what is the most, it's like choosing a partner. You just make a list of pros and cons. These are the things that I need. These are the non-negotiables, and just kind of take it from there. Like any other big decision in life.
Yeah. It's almost as important as that. Almost.
Almost.
I mean, you're
almost. No, it is.
Spending a lot
of
your time.
It is.
It's an investment.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's true. I hope we've helped you, Big Jim. I mean, the reality is we don't actually know for certain about the 4A yet. It's all kind of rumors. And using the history of the 3A, which if you come from that angle, then yeah, that's probably why we're pretty hyped on it, because I loved the 3A. I thought it was a great mid-range phone.
And you won't have to worry about motion sense, because they're not going to put that in there. So you're not going to have a bunch of useless... You know, I wouldn't say useless, just lack of use case feature.
There's an app in the app section that would disagree with you, Flo.
Oh,
useless.
Okay. We'll get to that.
We will get to that. But first, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode of All About Android, and that is IT Pro TV. If you are interested in an IT career of your own, but you aren't sure where to start, well, IT Pro TV has taken the guesswork out of that whole process. You know exactly where to go. IT Pro TV's learning coaches will help you navigate the IT career roadmap and assist in finding the perfect career that's right for you. You can actually sign up for a premium membership and then let an expert guide you. You're going to start by seeing and setting goals, and your coach is going to implement an IT training program to help you reach them. Their extensive IT career paths library can actually assist you in learning more about the vast different IT careers that you can pick, so you can pick one that is best suited for you. From entry-level IT to cybersecurity to so many others, you can learn the ins and outs of them all as a jumping-off point, such as what you'll be doing and how much you have the potential to make when you're there, all aspects of IT. Once your training is complete, IT Pro TV takes it a step further and helps assist you in finding the career of your dreams. IT Pro TV also has a learning coach for teams, so you can engage and grow the skill base of your team members through a corporate premium membership. There are actually more than 4,000 hours of IT training that they offer, as well as being the official video training partner for CompTIA, and have 12 CompTIA on-demand courses, including CompTIA A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus certifications. Now, by the way, is the perfect time to maximize the potential of your team and help them get the certifications that they need to become successful. This whole environment of working from home, whether you're working for a team or you're on your own and you want to learn on your own, it's ideal. It's ripe for this, this sort of approach. So let IT Pro TV guide you into the IT career that is best for you. Go to itpro.tv/allaboutandroid. Make sure and use code AAA30 and you'll receive 30% off all consumer subscriptions. That's itpro.tv/allaboutandroid and use code AAA30. You'll get an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. And we thank them for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. All right, we've got some interesting stuff coming up right now. You don't even have to wait more than a couple of seconds for this bumper to play. It's time for some apps.
I did enjoy the adventures in remote podcasting, and that was Jason was saying you don't have to wait. At least for me, his connection slowed down. It got the slow-mo voice, and so that was a nice juxtaposition.
You don't need to wait.
Has it corrected itself?
Yes, it has, thankfully.
Okay, good. So. Man, you just never know what you're going to get.
I will say Flo is about to talk about an app that I nearly jumped on for the arena, and then I'm like, oh, it's a Google app.
So I've got some news for those who have been hoping for a little bit of an easier way to get the assistant to kind of help you out in doing common phone tasks. And Burke, if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to drop a URL in our chat so that we can do this together live and on screen.
Let's do it together.
I thought it would be fun. Yeah, I thought so. Last week, Google announced, I could tell you what I'm talking about. Last week, Google actually announced a couple of accessibility-driven features for Android. A couple new updates coming to things like sound amplifier, live transcribe, a couple updates there. And also, another thing that they had announced was an app called Action Blocks. And the point behind Action Blocks was to kind of help automate some oft-used features that you usually do on Android, either for folks who maybe have a seeing impairment or for folks who maybe don't, you know, can't necessarily interact with the screen. So they would use an action block, set it up to kind of help them do something common like, I don't know, turning on the smart bulb in a house or even starting a video call with Duo, for instance. So I was thinking it'd be fun, informative for those tuning into video, and I'm gonna do my best to make this as engaging as I can for our audio listeners as well, but just kind of like walk through what it's like to set this, to set up an action block on your Android device. So Burke, if you wouldn't mind going to the URL, it should be all set up for you. So here we are on my page. Hopefully nobody calls or texts during this whole thing. But this is basically when you download Action Blocks from the Play Store, anybody can download this and set this up. And what this is going to do is you're going to basically use the same formulation that you would for a Google Assistant command, but you're going to set it up as this easy to use widget. And the reason you'd want to do this is, let's say you're a user who, you know, can't interact with the screen, so you would use TalkBack and kind of have Android use it that way. Or, you know, maybe, you know, this is for anybody to have access to. So you'd create an action block, and it gives you a couple of common actions. So we're going to go ahead. Let's see what's under other actions. As you can see, a lot of the features that are offered are things that you can already do with the assistant. So under other actions, we have options to create a custom action, create a reminder, open an app, open the calendar, get directions. There's also home control actions. You can set the temperature at home, turn on the lights, turn turn off the lights. And some of the more common actions they have listed are making a phone call, starting a video call, sending a text message, playing a video, playing music, or setting an alarm. I think for this one, we're going to do, let's open an app. What does that sound like? You guys agree? I think you guys agree. We're going to open an app with this one. So let's open an app that we use a lot. Now, this action block, you are going to set it up the same way that you would a Google Assistant command. So think about the app that you would like to launch. Now, the thing about action blocks is, as exciting as it is, again, it's limited to what the assistant can do. So it required that the app that you would like to launch actually has been installed, configured, and works with this particular command line. There's also the ability to select whether you want this action to always be spoken out loud. Of course, you have to take into consideration that others might be listening in. So just something to take into account. And if anybody who is familiar with IFTTT usually will let you, or it will always let you, test the code before, or test the action before it goes live, you could do the same thing with an action block. So we're going to open an app. Let's see. How about we let's open Spotify. Let's get our music going because it's something that we would just love to do. So we're going to go ahead and you can either say it or you could type it in. Do open Spotify. All right. And then we're going to go to test it. So we're going to tap this test action button. Okay. And we're testing it. It works. Hooray. All right. So we're going to go back to, sorry, everybody that is watching this and that is feeling, did this action do what you expected? A dialogue window asks me, to which I say yes, or you can edit it if that's not the case. So now we're going to tap on next. Okay. Now we can set an image if you'd like for this to kind of just make it easily recognizable. You can go in your photo library, take a photo with a camera. Maybe, you know, you're trying to control a specific smart object in your house. That would be helpful in that case. Or you can go into the symbol library. I'm going to go into the symbol library. I'm just, for the purposes of this little show and tell, I'm just going to select this cool space icon that they have here. And then I'm going to give this action a name. So this action is going to be called Play Music. And I can't spell music. That's what's happening right now. Now we're going to save this action block. It's going to ask you if you want to add it to the home screen. Of course, we'd like to add it to the home screen. We want this to be very helpful. So I'm going to tap next. And then what I'm going to do is you could have Android add your widget auto magically, as it says. So it'll just add it to the home screen wherever it wants. Or you can long press and hold and then drag it to where you would, come on, where you would like it to go. All right. And then there we go. Now we have a helpful Play Music widget, which I'm going to tap and show you how that launches. And it's initiating the assistant. And then boom, there we go. We're in the Spotify app. So that is the extent of action blocks. And now action blocks is, there's a variety of cases where you can use it. So for folks who might want more accessibility added to the Android operating system, it's also a great thing to consider if maybe you're setting up a phone for an elderly loved one, maybe somebody who isn't so keen on the ways that the UI works on Android, or they just want to have, you know, those easy to access features right there under their fingertips. This is a great just little feature to set up. And again,
I'll add to that flow. You can have a power user like ourselves, where I'm in scenarios where I use Assistant all the time with my Google Home and I don't want to speak things because I'm in the room with the babies and I might want to say turn lights off, turn lights on, play this song or any of this sort of stuff. And honestly, sometimes the voice assistant doesn't always get the right thing or can't hear you or whatever. And if hitting a shortcut button on my phone would make things so much easier sometimes. So this is that's one of the reasons why I almost jumped all over this, because I was like, this is actually the assistant functionality I've been looking for.
I mean, if you think about it, it's essentially distilling down some of the easy tap options that you get on a smart display So my Lenovo smart display, I can go in and set the temperature. I can, you know, touch around and change the color of the lights and the brightness. So you would maybe set up an action block that could do that for you, and then you just have it on your phone. It's so much easier than having to actually speak to the assistant. So it's just generally an app that is helpful for a variety of use cases. And
I think it's ironic that the value add for the assistant is the whole voice interaction. And now we're coming up with ways to circumvent that.
I know.
But and like Google's coming up with ways to circumvent it.
Well, but because I think the whole point was it started as something that was voice centered, and then for it to truly evolve, like it can't just be for people who speak, you know, that
right,
makes it a limited feature. So this just makes it universally available to everybody. And anyway, all of this is just one giant manifestation of the Google Assistant. That's all it is. It's another way to tap into that available engine and just make it available for everybody. And that's what Google's kind of good at. So
I will say being dependent on the assistant, especially in a parenting environment, does yield some fascinating results. Whereas a couple of months ago, for some reason, you know, we would play for the babies the same album, the same record all the time. And me and my wife had it then, like, you know, hey, G, play this album, you know, whatever. And for some reason, it just started playing something else. And like I tested it, everything. I finally direct messaged Google or Nest or Mate, whatever the account is on Twitter. And we went back and forth for about a week. And they're like, "Oh, hey, what album are you trying to get to?" And I was I recorded what was happening, sent it to him. And then one day it magically worked. And I'm fairly certain that someone just hard coded those results to get me to shut up. but then it happened again this weekend where, like, so for example, if anyone's seen on Netflix John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch, there's a great song at the end of it with Jake Gyllenhaal called Music, Music Everywhere that my kids just love. It's just like fantastic. And so we play that song on a daily basis. And for whatever reason, this weekend, I said the same command to Google, and it, instead of playing the song on Google Play Music, it played a YouTube music playlist from John Mulaney and the Sack Bunch Lunch, which started with a different song. And for the life of me, we could not get to the song we wanted. And I was like, I let it go for like a day, and then I was about to send the direct message again, and then it started working again the way we wanted it to. So sometimes they tune things on the behind the scenes as to where it goes and things like that. Yeah, but being able to set up an action block where I know I want to play this song and I don't have to ask the same question to the assistant, I can just press the button on the phone and play it, and the kids will start laughing. That's worth it for me. So like I installed this app, I'm setting stuff up. It's totally the way to go.
And it's much easier than setting up a voice command or setting up maybe a routine. Because I know that for some folks, they really rely on routines to get the assistant to do things. But like your example, Ron, and I know we've been talking a lot about parenting on this podcast, but because the three of us are family, you know, we talk about these things because this is how we use this stuff in our life. And
using technology.
For me, the big headache is like when my daughter is screaming because she's super tired because, you know, she takes after me. I got to get those lights down low, and I got to get the red lights on. Like, we need to get the lights low. We need to just change the environment. And I don't know. It's like magic. It just works on her. But if you're not getting the name of the light correct and the baby is crying and screaming and Google can't hear you, you just want that button to just press and like make everything into the perfect sleep environment. So
my favorite
use cases.
My favorite All About Parenting and Google Assistant, Google Home mistake was that after Christmas, the Christmas time ended and I took down the Christmas trees.
Yes.
I took the smart outlets for the Christmas trees and put them in the baby's room and put all the lights on that. And so it's great. We just say, turn on the lights or whatever. I did not change the automatic timer that I had set to turn the lights on at a certain time. And so it might have gone several days, but one day my wife was like, did the lights just go on in the baby's room? And I was like, oh my God. So they were literally at 7:30, whatever it was, the Christmas lights were turning on, but that was the lamp in the baby's room. And so I quickly scrambled to turn it off and then killed that timer. But yeah, sometimes you got to keep track of all your devices and how they're working, especially when little ones are involved.
This is how real people use the stuff. Okay. I'm just going to put another one out for us here. This is how the real people in the world use this stuff. Okay. You know, it's when you're just stressed or when you're trying to do five things at once, trying to get something work, like that's yep. kind of stuff really.
Yeah. And with action blocks, you could just have like a single home screen that has your most often used things just on a grid with some nice images and everything. You can get creative with it. So that is action blocks. Point. Yeah. Do a search for it in the Play Store and you can find it, but you won't find it in the arena because it's made by Google. All right. Another app that's made by Google. Google released a new Soli sandbox app. You remember Soli, right? That was the thing that was included on the Pixel 4. It's like that radar that's supposed to do a number of things
yeah, we were
when you
move
your hand
that.
In the air, blah, blah, blah. Well, now there's the Soli sandbox app for developers to interact with Soli features in creative ways. You had to know they were going to do this at some point. The app includes four prototypes, some games and scripts, and the ability to create apps and games using HTML5 and JavaScript to tie in with Soli and to share with other users. So neat. Like, I can't help but feel like, yeah, why didn't you get this out sooner? Because maybe you could have capitalized on a little bit of the excitement around Soli. Now people are kind of like, I don't know, like if there was excitement, it seems to have worn off pretty considerably. At least it has for me. Also, 9to5 Google has sources that say that the Pixel 5 will not have a Soli radar sensor in it. So if there was reason to get excited about Soli, maybe that's not actually going to happen in a future phone. So, you know, don't get too sold on it. Don't get too sullied on it. And obviously,
oh, don't get too sullied on it. Oh,
sorry.
Sad trombone. Wow.
Obviously, the 4A is not going to have a Soli radar in it either, right? Because it's a less expensive phone. And I'm sure that cutting edge technology tacks some price, some cost onto the price. So I don't know. Do you think this is like too little, too late? What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. They should have done this before they did that huge push for Pixel 4. Get Soli. Look at all this cool stuff. This phone is $900.
Like, yeah.
The whole thing. See, it's so funny because there's so many things that Google does. Like, it's literally hit or miss. Like, there's some stuff that is spot on. That's great, especially with these phones. You know, like the Pixel, you know, 3A. You know, and some of the stuff that they do, you know, with some of the camera stuff and stuff like that, just seems like they're really thinking about it. And then they put out stuff that just seems like an afterthought or a good idea that like the person who was working on took vacation and they didn't finish it. Or whatever it might be, like, and then it ends up getting axed. I mean, how long until Soli ends up in the graveyard completely?
No,
I don't know that will happen because I feel like they've been working on this for so long.
Soli long,
yeah,
Soli long.
Soli long. This is not like Google Wave. I think I don't know if it'll go to the graveyard, but I think it is very possible that it will get buttoned up into another kind of technology
device.
That Google Wave was for Google Docs, etc. Like this is just the way we have to think about these things with Google. Everything is beta, and it's all R&D. Yeah, we are the R&D, and you know that's what we sign up for. That's the contract we enter in when we bring home a Google device.
Indeed. Yeah. Could totally see it go out of the phone, but go into the home devices. Like we've talked about that before. Some of those gestures make a lot of sense for a home device, right?
Skip or Diane von Furstenberg comes out with a whole line of touch clothing. You just touch yourselves, everybody. Just
does that work? Because that works so well for Levi's.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, oh, man. Lighting the
That's
world.
That's what happens when you make a jacket just for men. You know, maybe if you looked out of the range.
Good point.
But not complaining.
Good point. Good point.
Fair.
All right. Ron, well,
one last story. And boy, you know, I know we talked about Google Play Music and YouTube Music, but we got a ton of response from the conversation last week, and the whole music app conversation continues to be interesting. And it's funny because one of my biggest, strongest talking points against going to Spotify is the fact that with 40,000 MP3s in my library that's up on Google Play Music and sitting on my hard drive and my desktop in the other room, Spotify isn't an option because they limited you to 10,000 uploads. Well, I don't know if Spotify is, you know, keenly looking at the marketplace with YouTube Music or perhaps stimulus checks, but they have
removed or listening to the show.
Or listening to the show. It could be listening to the show. That's a valid point. But they have removed the 10,000 song upload limit, making it unlimited for all Spotify users. But it's important to note that this is not a digital locker. Downloads are still limited to 10,000 songs. And also a single playlist can only hold 10,000 songs, which is also funny because who has a playlist that's 10,000 songs long? Although I guess if you just wanted like an everything playlist and then shuffle that, whatever, that's a weird use case. But so needless to say, they're just changing the upload limit, but there are still some restrictions related to 10,000 songs still on the platform. But it makes the argument for moving against to Spotify a little stronger. So, or, you know, so good on them. With the way storage exists now, I never understood you have a limit. Like there's no need for a company like Spotify size to have an upload limit. So glad to see they lifted that.
I mean, the timing is pretty good here for this.
It is, Smart. But I want to say we've been getting a lot of feedback about the discussions that we've been having about YouTube Music. And I think this is very much resonating with people, just what is going on with music streaming and whether you own music or not. The way that we consume music has changed so much in the last 10 years. And I feel like now, because it's getting whittled down to just these few services that are available, people are really starting to say, oh my gosh, this moved really fast. What just happened? And realizing that the permanence of your music library, it really just depends on if you keep paying that third party to give you the rights to listen to music. And very different from where we all started.
Yeah, totally.
Well, that's why you don't necessarily need to move away from that if you don't want to. I mean, you know, a couple of weeks ago in the arena, I showed Plex Amp, which is a music app by the folks at Plex. And if you have your MP3s or your FLAX or whatever your digital files of choice, you can own your music. You can own that file and still stream it to your device. You don't need to be dependent on a monthly streaming service that is essentially a SaaS platform at this point now. And you can break that chain. It is fascinating to me because the other thing that I noted from the conversation about YouTube Music and Google Play Music from last week and the response that we got from it is that everyone's needs and what's important to everyone is completely different. And I do have to feel for the team at YouTube Music, you know, Brandon. Over at the YouTube Music team who gave us time to talk to us, to have to weigh all of those things because, you know, Lord knows, you know, I'm currently working on an app that, you know, that is going to be used by, if we're lucky, you know, thousands of people, you know, but in reality, it's probably hundreds of people to start, you know, and to think of developing an app that has, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that could use it or millions of people. And, you know, in the small universe of users that me and my team are talking about, the number of edge cases and the weird, well, what if someone does this and then they want to do this and then they want to do that? And you get down this rabbit hole of edge cases. And at some point you're going to say, okay, listen, yes, there might be five people who are going to do that, but there's 100 people who aren't. So we need to focus on those 100 people. Doing this stuff, you're fraught with making decisions day in and day out. And I'm sure that the folks at YouTube Music, just like I'm sure the folks at Spotify, I'm sure the folks at Amazon Prime Music Unlimited, whatever it's called, are all having those discussions and making those decisions based on what they think is the best foot forward for their product. And I do respect that. You know, and what might work for me doesn't work for Flo, doesn't work for Jason, but works for Burke. You know, you never know. So it's definitely a nuanced conversation. And Flo, you're absolutely right. The landscape of listening to music on your electric device is completely different. Even from when we started this show, you know, an eternity ago, 9 years ago, it's just completely different.
Yeah, one thing that I found interesting when I was kind of reading up on this story leading up to the show, I ended up in a subreddit that was talking about it. And there were so many comments in there that were like, who has 10,000 songs? Like, why do you need unlimited? Who the heck has 10,000 songs? Which just made me really think about where we were 10 years ago when it came to music ownership and where we are now, where music streaming is the norm. And quite literally, like if you're getting into music now, There is absolutely, like, I understand why people would be confused. Why 10,000? Why would anyone on earth have 10,000 songs in the library? It's already there. Why do you have to, you know what I mean? Because they're just so used to streaming the library that is there. Mm-hmm. If you were to take your music library and pull out all the things that were definitely still available, it would be, I would imagine it would be at least considerably smaller than what it is right now, yeah. And I also know that you have a lot of stuff that is not very easy to find, but still a large number of that would be represented in their on-service library. So people are like, well, ownership doesn't matter anymore. I just pay the fee, and maybe I have 100 of those songs that I'd want to upload, but 10,000, that's ridiculous. It's just a different time now, you know?
Yep.
Totally different. Totally different.
All right.
Well, that said, let's take a... Yeah, very good discussion. As always, whenever we start talking about messaging or music or any of the M's related to Android, it is always wonderful. Multimedia. Let's take a break on the M's of Android and thank our last sponsor of the evening. We want to thank LegalZoom for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, health and safety is on the top of everyone's minds right now. No matter what happens, you want to make sure that all your loved ones are protected. And that's why LegalZoom continues to provide a reliable way for everyone to set up the right estate plan without leaving your home. You know, I've said it on previous shows. Throughout this show, we were talking about parenting and our families and kids. I've got a family now. I've got, in addition to myself, I've got three other people that I need to worry about and make sure they're taken care of. And luckily enough, LegalZoom is there to help me set up an estate plan or to identify when I need a last will and testament or whatever other legal documents you might need. And it starts with finding the answers to your questions. You know, do you need a last will and testament or a living trust? What about an advanced healthcare directive? And what is power of attorney? Thankfully, you don't have to figure everything out on your own. LegalZoom's online resources make it easy to get started. And if you need to speak to an attorney, their independent attorney network is there to guide you and advise you. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, so you won't have to worry about expensive billable hours adding up. So take an important step for your family today. Go to LegalZoom.com and get started on a last will, living trust, and more. Or find out how you can speak to an attorney for advice on the right estate plan. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. And thanks, LegalZoom, for being so easy and helping our families. Thanks, LegalZoom.
Thank you, LegalZoom. All right, it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, you placed your vote last week for your favorite app. I have taken a screenshot of it, but I have not actually looked at the results, and I am now, well, slowly, once my internet loads. And the winner is Rotation Manager at 33, almost 34%. Was that yours, Ron?
It was mine, and I would like to take this victory as a victory lap around beating Mateo in the arena, which was the main goal of last week. So.
Yeah, not bad. Well, you weren't the only one that beat Mateo. So Rotation Manager wins first at 33%. Flo, you came in second with Pro Riding at 28%. Mateo comes in third, Star Trek Fleet Command at 24%. And I came in last place with Headspace at 13%. All right. So where are we at?
I'll tell you what that means. After 20 weeks of the arena, Flo has closed the gap from being on maternity leave. She left us in week 8 when she was leading, or left us whatever week was, but she was last leading in week 8. Thanks to Wade County for the stat. She's back in the lead with 51 points with that second place finish. Jason, you are in second place with 49 points, so you're just 1 point behind. But don't count me out, because with that first place finish last week, I've got 46 points and I'm in third place. And the guests are in last place with 43 points. So if I come in first again and Flo comes in last, there's a good chance that I will not overtake first place, but I'll close the gap even more. So Flo, I'm really going to need you to skip next week if you can. That'd be really great. So
great. Thanks.
What's even better is that not only did I beat Mateo last week, though, which is the true self victory that I was aiming for. I get to go last, and Jason, you get to go first. So why don't you take it away?
Right. You go ahead and kick back, relax in your hot, hot apartment. I'll do this first one in my hot, hot bedroom. It's very warm in here. Okay. So my app, I did not record B-roll for this. So Burke, you can just show the Play Store, but, a lot of people are really excited that the app Citra Emulator for 3DS, Nintendo 3DS games, is out. Now, this has been in the works for years. And it's finally been released. If you wanted to, you could have, you know, gone to the Citrus site prior to now. Maybe they had it on the Play Store in some sort of beta format. I'm not really quite sure. But it's there. It's an early access app. There's a free version as well as paying $4.99 to get some access to some extra themes, theming of the app, which is kind of a light option, but also also includes some visual kind of upgrades. You get additional texture filters for kind of enhancing the visuals in the games. But this is all about Nintendo 3DS and emulation of 3DS. So, you know, the standard kind of rules apply. Make sure that you're only using this to play games that you actually own, that you have the, you know, that you have the ownership of. Everything that I've seen and everything that I've read says that actually Android phones play Nintendo 3DS games pretty darn well. It includes a hit CPU compilation. It includes asynchronous GPU emulation, a whole lot more, a lot of little settings in there that you can tweak in order to kind of, you know, improve the speed, stretch out the sound to kind of make things a little bit smoother, stuff like that. You do get support for gamepads. And when you do that, you can actually remove the on-screen gamepad overlay. So you can do the touchscreen gamepad approach if you like, but you can remove that and sync it up to a gamepad if you have it. Also supports the on-device cameras, microphone, and accelerometer, which is nice because some of the 3DS games tap into that, and they've routed that to the Android device. Performance, from what I've seen, is very good for these games. And so I'm curious if you guys, you know, check it out, what you have to say about it. It does have a number of screen layouts. So you can either make, because you know the 3DS has two different displays, right? So you can either make the main display, like, take up the full screen, or you can set it so that you have the two displays equally side by side or top to bottom. Or you can have the secondary screen be like a smaller display and then a larger main display. So that's pretty cool. It only works on 64-bit Android devices, Android 8.0 and up. So it's, you know, part of the challenge here was making, you know, a Nintendo 3DS emulation smooth enough to play. And if you have a modern smartphone and 64-bit smartphone, you're going to get great performance. However, I am seeing reports that people with Exynos processors are not having as good, you know, good results as you might get with like a latest Snapdragon processor. So check that out. You know, based on your device, your mileage may vary. But it's called Citra Emulator, and I'm gonna spell that for you because it's really important. Citra. If you go onto the Play Store and you do a search for Citra Emulator, very likely the result that comes back is an app that's pretending to be the same app that's called Citro. So they put an O at the end. That's not the right one. It's the one with the lemon. I think you're seeing it. I think so. Is that? Oh, sorry, I've got a small. Yeah, that's it. Citra Emulator, early access. You might get a different result that throws you to Citro Emulator. Maybe Google has already rectified it. But even when you spell out Citra Emulator one word, it was still going like automatically to that other one. And that one's full of ads and it's someone else just pretending to be this. You don't want to do that. You want to make sure you're on the right one. So it's Citra Emulator. The developer name is Citra Emulator. And I don't know if you're a fan of the Nintendo 3DS platform and you have legally acquired games, then you should check this out. And what do you know? Your Android device can now play Nintendo 3DS games. Pretty cool. Pretty cool that you can even do this with a smartphone in your pocket. So very
pretty cool.
Yep. Citra Emulator.
All right, shows the value of good App Store optimization in your title and your app name if someone else stole their traffic.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Although Wojo in chat is reminding me, put multi-word names inside double quotes. That almost always gets me to the right app. I'm going to try that real quick here. I bet.
Yeah, that's hard for regular users.
Yeah, Citra Emulator in quotes. And yeah, I mean, it takes it right to the top for me. So, but I've installed it. So maybe that's throwing off the algorithm a little too. So anyways, there you go. Citra Emulator. Check it out for yourself. All right, Flo, you got the next one.
Okay, so I don't actually have a demo for y'all today because I think that I don't feel super comfortable having all that fitness stuff with my app being up on display for everybody, but I am going to talk about the app that I brought today, which surprisingly has not been in the arena, even though it's a very well-known app. And the app I brought is Strava. You may have heard this app. This is an app that is very popular with runners, bikers, cyclists, and I started getting into it last year for swimming. And part of the reason I really liked it is because it had a friend, you know, community element to it. So I have a couple friends who are on it. And we're all just like leading each other on. And look, I'm not Miss Athletic over here, but I'm going to tell you, it feels nice when you go for a nice long swim or you go for a hike and then your friend from another state over gives you a kudos and goes, way to go. It makes you feel good, okay? So that was one of the reasons I kind of logged on to Strava. I had stopped using it through my pregnancy, though, just because exercise was not happening the way it used to. But now that I'm getting back into it, it also turns out that Strava has had a huge update. So the app, which just released a major update today, and I was actually reminded of this through a push notification, which is what got me to go back in and start setting everything up. So normally, and what the app is very well known for is the fact that you can record your hikes and your biking and what your route was and elevation. And all that, which is great to have that information when you are comparing, you know, and contrasting your performance. But now it lets you actually map your route. And apparently, and I haven't actually used this yet, but apparently now you can map it so that you can go places that aren't super crowded. So you can kind of adjust your routes so that you can go running or biking someplace that's not going to be just teeming with people because we're still practicing social distancing. So a lot of these new features, of course, comes with a subscription, and a subscription, I believe, is about $60 a year. I'm already subscribing to some things for fitness purposes, and so I am very curious to see if this is going to be something I stick with. They're giving you a 2-month trial right now. Some of the new features include a big routes update, which is the one that I mentioned, which lets you plan your routes that you're going to go on, as well as gives you recommendations. This is for both the iOS app and Android, just, you know, if you have anybody in your home who has an iPhone in their possession. Also, it lets you do match rides so that you can analyze performance. And just on, if you're a biker, it'll let you analyze the performance based on the same route you've done over and over again. Lets you see your full workout history only on the iOS version, which is a bit of a bummer, but hopefully that'll come to Android soon. Workout analysis available for all activity types. It lets you do grade adjusted pace. So, you know, maybe it didn't factor in the fact that you were going uphill or downhill. Now it will, which is nice to have that data available. There's also new leaderboard segments that you can take part in. So I just joined a June-July walkathon. Let's see how much walking I can get done in the next 2 months. And also now you can access your training log on Strava.com and on Android devices. There's also favorites feeds. It let you do things like effort detection. All these new little features that I have yet to kind of dig into, but the idea of them gets me excited. The other reason that I suggest Strava is because if you're a Samsung Watch user like me, this is one of the few apps that actually works with Tizen OS. So something to just kind of keep in mind. Of course, there is a Wear OS app. I haven't used Wear OS in years as a daily driver, so I can't really speak to that. But I can say that on the Samsung Galaxy Watch Active, which is the one that I have, it works really well. And I'm looking forward to kind of testing out this new subscription service, seeing if I can really get my money's worth out of Strava. And of course, while I'm doing all of this, I'll have my friends by my side cheering me on, which is always fun. So check out Strava. And mind you, it's not just for the activities I mentioned. If you know, if you're a hiker, it's great. One of the reasons I use it, but it also does CrossFit, kayaking, rock climbing, surfing, which is another thing that you can do while we were being socially distanced. It does yoga, which is another thing that I really like about it. Because that's something I practice at home. And it also does indoor running, cycling, and gym workouts. So stuff that you're doing at home. Something to kind of keep in mind. So Strava, check it out. It's free. Free to try. Free to use some of the free tiers. And then there's also a subscription service that gets you just a little bit more.
Nice. Everybody's heard of Strava at one point or another. Check it out.
I can't believe it hasn't been in the arena yet. That's a good deep cut there, Flo. Good job.
Yeah, deep cuts.
So my turn in the arena, I like to say, you know, hey, I came in first last week. I'm strong. You know, Jason's got a Nintendo emulator. Flo's got an app that helps you get outside and go be active. How am I going to counter all that? How am I going to win this week? With an app that lets you track the amount of time you spend on tasks. Exactly. Productivity nerds out there, you with me? All right. So but those of you, and it's actually funny because, you know, Flo, you know, kind of similar to your app pick this week, coming out of your real life, getting the update, being more active. Recently in my day job, I had the need to actually recommend an app to do this. And I recommended this app. And then I was glad to see that they've come out with a new version, and the early access new version is what I've got here in the arena. And if you're a freelancer, or if you work for an agency or any sort of company that needs you to track your time spent working, or if you just want to keep track of all of your, you know, exactly how long you're spending on tasks because you're working on projects, if time management is an issue for you, the best, you know, tool you can get is something that helps it makes it very easy to track specifically how much time you're spending on a task. So this app is called Clockify Time Tracker, and essentially, I'm not sharing my screen because it's so simple. So Burke, we can just go to the screenshots in the Google Play Store here. But essentially what it allows you to do is it allows you to set up individual projects in your app. And you can go to the first screenshot there. There you go. And you can set up different projects. And then as you start doing a task underneath it, you just hit the action button, and it allows you to enter in, this is the task I'm doing, this is the time I started, and you say, okay, what are you working on? I'm doing this thing, and it just keeps a timer. And that timer runs until you stop the timer, when you stop doing that task. And then you could look at the end of the day and see, okay, how did I spend my time? How did my time get put against it's also completely free, private, without any ads for those of you who are watching the video who could see their screenshot there. But what it allows you to do is it allows you to, you know, basically get a inventory of the time spent doing your tasks. So, you know, this is totally, totally crucial if you are a freelancer like Flo, or an hourly worker, or if you work in law, or you work at an advertising agency, or anything like that. You always need a way to keep track of your time. So what better than it is to have an app to help you do it? So Clockify appears to be the best of the best breed of these type of apps. It's what I suggested to my employees who have to keep track of their time. It makes it super simple, just one tap to, you know, kind of start recording your time, one tap to end it, and then it gets all logged if you've got all the projects up set up in there. And then they have a very robust website that allows you to track your projects and, you know, get more information and data on your time spent. So if you're looking to keep track of time, Clockify is the way to go. Get the early access version of their new app. Very impressed with the material design and just the ease of navigation. Everything worked really well. So Clockify, free in the Google Play Store.
Nice. Clockify Time Tracker. Look for the early access in the title. All right. Place your vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Citra Emulator? Is it Strava? Is it Clockify? Go to twit.to/AAApoll474. twit.to/AAApoll474 to place your vote. And Burke is circling. He's very indecisive. Has no vote.
Ooh.
Oh.
Burke.
Wow. Okay. We need Burke.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez.
Burke, that hurts. Not cool, man.
That hurts, Burke. But whatever. You can do whatever you want with your vote. You can waste your vote by not placing it. Sure. Cool. We still love you, Burke, though.
Maybe.
I knew it. I knew it.
.. Vote for Citra. Thank you, Burke. It worked. All right. We've reached the end of this episode of All About Android. Thank you so much for watching and listening each and every week. Flo, let's start with you. What you got going on?
I've got a lot of stuff going on right now. I'm just, you know, like Ron said, looking for some new ways to do time management, especially now that I've also got a newborn. So we'll see how this works. It's kind of what I'm working on right now. If you need to get in contact with me, or maybe you have a question, need some tech help, FlorenceIon.com is a great way to kind of figure out where I'm at on the web and follow me elsewhere. And that's also where I will update what I'm working on. So
nice. Excellent. Thank you, Flo. What about you, Ron?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ronxo.com. That's where I post my usual nonsense. And if you want to check out my side project about pinball, you can go to scorbit.io. And if you want to check out fun comic book stuff, you can go to ifanboy.com, where I appear on the podcast occasionally to talk about movies and TV shows and not comics. And I also talk about G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, every Sunday on ifanboy.com. Save the day.
Yep. Right on. Thank you, Ron. Good work as always. Also, good work to you, Burke. Thank you for pushing buttons and voting for my app. The check is in the mail. Also, thank you to Anthony, who is filling in for Victor behind the scenes. I got your work cut out for you tonight on the edit, Anthony, and we do appreciate your time. You can find me all over the Twit Network, but you know my new show that's related to this show is Hands on Android. Go to twit.tv/HOA. Even though I put H-O-W, that's another fine show, Hands on Wellness. But H-O-A, there's Ann Pruitt on Hands on Wellness. H-O-A is Hands on Android. Last week's episode is a bunch of tips and tricks that you can find that I've found that I'm passing along with Chrome for Android as the target. This upcoming Thursday, I have an episode in the works that is kind of more advanced features, things you might not know about Google Assistant running on your phone. So that's twit.tv/HOA. I've even got like the standard YouTube thumbnail thing going. I'm like, oh, let's see what happens when I do the picture of me in the background with my mouth open. You've seen that one a million times. It's so much fun. But that's it for this week. Thank you for no. Okay, switch away. It's weird.
That's a great thumbnail. That's a great thumbnail, my friend. That's pretty good.
Thank you. I'm having some fun with it, you know. This show publishes every Tuesday evening. twit.tv/AAA is the show page on the web. That's where you can go to subscribe to All About Android. Find it in audio, video formats there, podcatcher of choice. They're all linked to there, as well as the link out to YouTube. If you want to subscribe there and do all of your YouTube things, you can do it through the page. twit.tv/AAA. And that's about it. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the show. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next week on All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Hey, folks. I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the Twit Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and a breaking the tech news. That's right. It's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.